Oh, man.
Line, left field, get down. Fair ball. Rivera ties the game. Dozier goes to third. Rivera has a double.
And a career-high 11-game hitting streak.
One of the younger Royals continuing to do some good things at the big league level, and there'll be lots of younger Royals. They'll be in Toronto. We'll explain that coming up in just a little bit as the Royals take 3-4 from the Detroit Tigers as for the first time all year, first time in 24 tries, 24th time is a charm, the Royals won after trailing after the first inning. They're now 1-23 after trailing after first inning. Rallied from a 1-0 deficit and win the ball game. Brady Singer, who has a 5-0 career record against the Tigers, he owns the Tigers. He gets the win, pitched well again, 6 innings, gave up just 1 run. He's 4-3 on the season. Royals now 35-53. Mike Matheny on Singer's fine start.
I'd say that's actually one of his best, only because the really good ones figure out ways to minimize the damage when you don't have your good stuff, and he didn't have his good stuff. He had a lot of close misses. His stuff was good, but that fine execution wasn't there like he wanted it to get him in the counts that he wanted to be. And next thing you know this guy gets into two tough spots and works his way out. They limited the damage early with just the sack fly and then kept trusting his stuff, and next thing you know he walks through six and just putting one on the board. I'm really impressed.
So the Royals win. They are 35-53, as I mentioned, take 3-4 from the Tigers. They'll head to Toronto, but they'll be shorthanded much more on that story that has absolutely taken over baseball in the last 24 hours, and it's become a national story as well. We'll explain all that and give you our take on the situation, and it'd be interesting to see how many people out there are consistent with their arguments. I will get to that in a moment. But first, the Chad McDaniel race was last night, plus some local baseball coming up this evening.
Yeah, the 11th running of the Chad McDaniel Memorial Race took place at Solomon Valley Raceway in Beloit last night. In the feature race, the USAC NAS Energy Drink National Midget Series, it was Thomas Messerall, who started in fourth spot, ended up as the winner of the 30-lap race. Messerall currently third in the USAC National Midget Point Standings, and he picked up his third win of the season Wednesday night. Points leader Buddy Kilfoyd finished in second place there at Beloit, and you can find the full results for the Chad McDaniel Memorial Race on Twitter. It's at USAC Nation. And then also at USACRacing.com. They have all the info you'd need for USAC racing. And again, a good night there in Beloit at the 11th running of the Chad McDaniel Memorial Race at Sullivan Valley Raceway. As Wade said, we do have a local baseball going on here tonight. Semifinals of both the K-18 East Regional Tournament and the Pee Wee District Tournaments. At K-18 East Region Tournament, Clay Center CCABA Tigers against Clifton Clyde at 6:30 there in Concordia at Doyen Field tonight. And then 25 minutes following that, it'll be Russell against Lincoln. So Lincoln really the only immediate area team that's still left that we will be tracking there at K-18 State coming up next week, because all four of these teams have already qualified for the state tournament. They'll just figure out where they get placed on the bracket with the semis today and then the finals tomorrow in Concordia. Pee Wee District Tournament semifinals. District 1 at Beloit tonight. Pike Valley against Beloit Rampage at 6:30. Concordia Legion against Concordia Chevys at 8 o'clock. District 2 at Concordia. Smith Center against the Beloit Mudcats at 6:30. Osborne takes on Concordia Knights at 8 o'clock in Concordia. And then District 3 is at Waterville. Valley Heights hosting that. Valley Heights against Clyde at 6:30. And Clifton against the Concordia Lions at 8 o'clock here tonight. So you can find all the brackets. All four district brackets are posted and updated at ncksports.com for Pee Wee Baseball. So, again, ncksports.com is your home for all the latest in local sports here in North Central Kansas.
All right. So I was joking with Dusty yesterday. I was like, hey, you know, get some sound from Big 12 Media Day. I think it'll be a slow show tomorrow. And now I don't know if we're going to get done by 10, and we want to go meet some people and talk to some people today.
I had it up there, and you can use what you want.
Yeah. Well, I'll use some of it, but I'm not going to be able to use all of it, that's for sure. Things change. So the big story is that the Royals, believe it or not, the Royals are in the news, but not for the right reasons. Or some people may say it is the right reasons. I guess it depends on how you feel about everything. But the Royals have today off. They will be in Toronto for a four-game series at 6:07 tomorrow night. Toronto has a new manager. They fired their manager after losing 9 of 11. They're 46-42. They're a game and a half out of the last wild card, and they fired their manager. The Royals manager is safe, and he's 18 under 500. So the Royals have to go to Canada. They've known this well before the season began. In fact, this is nothing new. Canada has had these restrictions in regards to you need to be vaccinated. It's a mandate in Canada. Same way for the U.S. There's a mandate. If you come from Canada into the U.S., you have to be vaccinated. If you are, you know, from Cancun, Mexico, and you live there and want to come visit, you got to be vaccinated to get into the United States. So the United States and Canada have the same rules. I've seen people out there don't understand that. So Canada is their own country, believe it or not. They're not the United States of America. That's North America. And so they have their mandate that you need to be vaccinated to come into the country. The Royals players have known this. Everybody in Major League Baseball has known this for a couple years now. So the Royals have not a couple of players. They have 10 players of their 25-man big league roster. 40% of their roster is not vaccinated against COVID-19. So thus, they cannot go into Canada. Thus, they cannot compete in a four-game series against the Blue Jays. And thus, the Royals will have to make a lot of call-ups today for the minors. And who knows what their lineup's going to look like tonight. So, here are the players. Salvador Perez is on the IL. So, MJ Melendez, starting catcher, not vaccinated. Cam Gallagher, backup catcher, not vaccinated. The Royals will be on their four-string catcher tomorrow night. And we don't even know who that's going to be. Probably Sebastian Rivero from AAA.
I would imagine.
He's had a cup of tea at the big league level. Hunter Dozier, who starts at first, sometimes DHs. He's a regular starter. He's out. Whit Merrifield wasn't going to probably play much in this series anyway. More on him in a moment. Out with an injury. He has not been vaccinated. Michael A. Taylor, who's injured maybe because Matheny laid him through 37 pitches in a 13-1 loss to Cleveland last weekend. Taylor was probably not going to play either. But he's one that is not vaccinated. The Royals' only all-star, Andrew Benintendi, is not vaccinated. More on that in a moment. Kyle Isabel, who's been starting in center field, he's not vaccinated. He will not make the trip. Brady Singer just started last night. No big deal. He wasn't going to start again until after the all-star break. But he is unvaccinated. Dylan Coleman, reliever, unvaccinated. Brad Keller, it looked like, was going to start maybe on Sunday before the all-star break. So now he's unavailable. He's unvaccinated. Pretty much every team thus far that has visited the Jays in Toronto has had a set of players who haven't got the vaccine and were then placed on restricted list, but this is a whole nother level. In fact, only 25 players total all year that have traveled to Canada from the U.S. have been placed on the restricted list because they've been unvaccinated. The Royals pushed that number, almost doubled it, to 35. So with the roster losses, the Royals have to dip into AAA and possibly AA to cover themselves for a four-game series in Toronto because 10 of their players decided, that is their choice, to not be vaccinated, which causes ripples throughout the roster, not only at the big league level, but the AAA and AA level, what you're going to do the next three or four games. And this is funny because Matt Snyder has a story on CBS Sports. He's the one that said that nobody was blocking Whit Jr. to be the shortstop for the Royals. And I had this conversation, and he doesn't know what he's talking about. He does this this article on CBS Sports, and this is what he says. And this is, once again, how clueless this guy is. And I want to troll him again. But he says, Dozier's the everyday starter at first. That's not necessarily true. Merrifield, while banged up at the moment, is a starter at second, but he hasn't been starting at second because he's been hurt, but he kind of says that. And Isabel would normally be the fill-in for Taylor in center. He has been the fill-in for Taylor. Taylor's hurt. Mm-hmm. And, oh yeah, Benintendi starts in right field. I did not know that the Royals' only all-star and gold glover plays right field. I so badly want to say some choice words right now, and I wish Matt Snyder was listening. You're a national writer. It isn't that hard to get the one all-star that plays for the Royals and get his position right. Oh, wait a minute. You said right. You meant left. You don't know between left and right field what the difference is? This guy knows nothing about Royals baseball. He's just a national writer that happens to write a story, pulls some information from somewhere else, and then makes it his own. But I just started laughing. But this is the only way the Royals get to be in mainstream conversation because they're so bad. It's probably good they're not in the mainstream conversation because they're so bad. And so Andrew Benintendi, let's start with him. He is an attractive trade piece. And some of the teams that are interested in him include the Toronto Blue Jays, the New York Yankees, and the Boston Red Sox. And some say that the Rays would be interested. That's four teams, or actually all five teams. Baltimore maybe could use him too. Baltimore's won 10 in a row. They're above 500. Every team in the AL East are above 500. Clearly the best division in baseball. They've won 10 in a row, the Orioles. by the way. And then and all Major League Baseball, not necessarily Major League Baseball, but ESPN and others, all these main stories, CBS Sports mentions Orioles at one of the top stories. They don't say anything about another team that's won 10 in a row. Seattle Mariners have won 10 in a row. Because they're on the West Coast, they mean nothing. But Baltimore is close to the Bristol, Connecticut headquarters, and CBS Sports is covering it. It's like, dude, there are two teams winning 10 games, and one apparently doesn't exist, and the other happens to be Baltimore. I understand the story. They were horrible last year, and they're now won 10 in a row, and they're going nuts, and they're above 500. But there is another team that's won 10 in a row. Like Major League Baseball, at least on their main headline, puts O's and M's 10 in a row. At least give them both credit. Mm-hmm. The Mariners don't even pop up as a lead story on anywhere on CBS Sports. Sports.com. It's like, for crying out loud. But I digress. So Andrew Benintendi would be attractive to go to any of those teams who have some good prospects. Well, what are those teams going to do now? He's unvaccinated. Toronto could make the playoffs. Toronto is in their division. You're going to have to probably go back to Toronto two more times if you're a member of the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Orioles and the Rays. So that takes away possibly five of the 29 other teams that would be interested in trading for Andrew Benintendi. So it hurts his market value because he made a choice not to be vaccinated. So this hurts. That hurts the Royals. What do you do in this situation? Because there is a fan base that's very upset, and I'll tell you why they're really upset. Because of Whit Merrifield's comments. And I'm really interested in getting Dusty's viewpoint on this. As a Royals fan and a guy that has been a fan of Whit for a very long time, I have as well. Although he has not performed as well this year, of course. Here's what Whit Merrifield had to say about him being unvaccinated. We can't really talk about the vaccination. Oh, wait a minute. That's the wrong one. That's Dayton. Okay, here's what Whit said. What I've seen and experienced, not what I've seen on social media. What I've seen and experienced, people that are vaccinated have got COVID-19 in this clubhouse. People that are vaccinated have spread it in this clubhouse to their families and whatnot. People have gotten pretty sick that are vaccinated. This is my opinion on it all. It's what I've come to based on the experiences and conversations I've had and what I've seen. This is the conclusion I've come to. Right or wrong, I didn't do it on a whim. It's been a long thought process because I understand what Canada has in place right now. That's the only reason that I would think about getting it at this point is to go to Canada. That might change down the road. Something happens and I happen to get on a team that has a chance to go play in Canada in the postseason. Maybe that changes. But as we sit here right now, I'm comfortable in my decision. My teammates support me, support the rest of the guys in here who have made that decision, and that's that. End of quote for Whit Merrifield. Listen, the line that grabs everybody's attention, and rightfully so, and it grabbed mine as well, is you are so strong in your feeling about not getting vaccinated. You've done all this research. You back up your reason for not getting vaccinated. I respect it. I have no problem with what Merrifield says in this whole comment until he says, that's the only reason that I would think about getting at this point is to go to Canada. That might change down the road. Something happens and I happen to get on a team that has a chance to go play in Canada in the playoffs postseason. Maybe that changes. So you're saying that your research is pretty rock solid. You don't want to get the vaccination. You stand by your decision unless you get traded to a contender. And now suddenly that research doesn't mean as much to you. It also says that you never thought the Royals were going to be in contention because we knew before the season began that the Royals have to go to Toronto for four games. The schedule was not made up that yesterday. It also means that as he got closer to Toronto, he could have been vaccinated so he could help his team win four games in Toronto. He chose not to be vaccinated. He basically is saying, if you read between the lines here, I didn't think we'd be any good, or the way we started, he might have been thinking I might get vaccinated if we're good, but they're not. Yeah. So thus, he doesn't. And I'll go back to the let's not rest Whit Merrifield in a Royals bus trip that our station took to Kansas City, but we're going to rest Bobby Witt Jr. And we know the reason why they rested Bobby Witt Jr. instead of Whit Merrifield. One of the reasons was, well, quite simply, Witt had a consecutive game streak being played. Now, ironically, and luckily for him, by the way, he got hurt. And what I mean by luckily he got hurt is that if he had not gotten hurt, his streak of games would have ended because he didn't get vaccinated. Think about that. He had played since Mahomes was a starting quarterback. He played every game for the Royals. I really wish he hadn't got hurt, because then we would be sitting here going, why did we keep penciling this guy in the lineup every day because of his streak when he was hitting .180 for about a month and a half of the season, but we were resting Bobby Witt Jr., our star shortstop, who's 22. Why in the world are we, we're leaving Witt in, as Dusty told me, and I've heard it from other people. Well, we're leaving Whit Merrifield in because he's leader on the team, and he's got this streak. But did the team and Mike Matheny not know that Whit Merrifield wasn't vaccinated until, like, yesterday? I mean, this streak was going to end no matter what. So what the hell was the point of playing him in a game and let Bobby Witt play instead of Whit Merrifield? So all I heard was, well, it's about the streak. It's about the streak. Well, if he didn't hurt his big toe the other day, his streak would be dead and over because he chose not to get vaccinated. And listen, he has a right to say, I want to get vaccinated, I don't. That is not my argument. I'm not saying he should have gotten vaccinated or he shouldn't. That is his choice. It is his choice. However, I would have loved to have seen the spin on that one. Well, he's a leader on the team. He refuses to go out of the lineup. He plays hurt, but then when it comes to getting a needle for a shot, he's out and will leave the team in a lurch for four games. And by the way, I want to throw this out here. If you are someone out there right now saying that, well, Whit Merrifield has a choice, he has a right to that choice, and he chose not to get vaccinated, and power to Whit Merrifield, but in the same line of thinking, in past situations, you call Kyrie Irving selfish and letting his team down. You call players that skip bowl games because they're getting ready for the draft as letting their team down, and that's selfish. Okay, then you need to be consistent with your argument, because that's what Whit Merrifield is doing as well. So here's my point. If you are supporting Whit Merrifield and what he's doing, that's perfectly fine. I get it and respect it. Then you should support Kyrie Irving. You should support players that skip bowl games. You know why? Because here's the easy constant to point out. And if you can't figure it out, I'll spell it out and put it on a chalkboard for everybody. It's all their personal choice. You know, think about it. Kyrie Irving let his team down. He did. I totally agree. He let his team down because he was supposed to be a star player on a team that could win a world championship, NBA title, and he let his team down. There's no doubt he did. However, Kyrie Irving has the right to decide whether he wants a vaccine or not. That's his choice. It's his body. It's his right. Okay? All right? I don't think anybody's going to disagree in this room that he has that right to do it, and we respect it. Okay? If you're going to say, well, these kids that skip these bowl games because they're worried about getting hurt so they get ready for the draft, Max and I have had this conversation. I respect Max. He respects me. And I totally agree with Max that, yes, you are letting your team down. But where Max and I have always differed is I said, but you know what? He's doing what's best for him. It is his choice, that player's choice. And yes, his team maybe feels let down a little bit, but I think his teammates probably understand to an extent what he's doing. But the constant here is that I agree with Max. If you got a kid that is obviously he's a great player if he's going to go to the NFL draft, and if he's going to sit out a bowl game, whether it's the lawn Poland weed eater bowl or whether it's a big bowl game, if he sits it out, I agree with Max. You are letting your team down. You are in essence quitting on your team at the end of the season and didn't finish the season. I agree with Max. Now, what I do say is I understand why he does it. I think his teammates might understand more than we give the teammates credit for. Mm-hmm. But I understand there's probably some people like, that's not cool, man. You're letting your team down. And there's probably some teammates that are like, that's not really that cool, man. You've been with us this whole time. You're being a little bit selfish, which everybody realizes. Well, so is Kyrie. So is Whit Merrifield. So is Hunter Dozier. So is the all-star on this team, Andrew Benintendi. So I don't want to hear people tell me, well, I support Whit. He has a right to do that. But then you rip Kyrie Irving. Or you rip bowl players that miss bowl games. They all are letting their team down, all right? They are. But they all have the right to choose whether they play or not. No, they don't have. Listen, Whit Merrifield's not getting paid. Neither of these guys are going to get paid for the next four games. They're not getting paid, all right? They don't count as service time, so it hurts.
That's why it's called the restricted list.
Restricted list. MJ Melendez, this does not count as service time. He loses service time. Like, this actually doesn't hurt the Royals. It saves them money, actually. It really does. It saves them some service time. It saves them money, and they're not going anywhere anyway. And that goes back to the original point. Whit Merrifield knew they weren't going anywhere anyway. But he will change everything he believes in if he gets traded to a contender. He says, I might. He didn't say for sure, but he said he'd consider. And listen, I appreciate Whit being actually honest, I think. But that's not something you should say. It basically means that you have given up on this organization to an extent. You are supposedly a leader that gets shoved in out the, into the lineup every day to keep your little streak alive. And by the way, it's convenient that it's the 4 days before the All-Star break. So now Witt's not an All-Star anymore. So now all these guys get 8 days off except Andrew Benintendi. It does hurt the Royals in regards to trade value, as we explained with Andrew Benintendi and Michael A. Taylor. Mm-hmm. By the way, Michael A. Taylor, we talked about how his shoulder's hurting him. But once he gets healthy or someone wants to trade for him, Michael A. Taylor's in the same boat as Andrew Benintendi. The Yankees have been – somebody's mentioned the Yankees Red Sox for Michael A. Taylor, too. It takes away – leverage for the Royals to get more for those two players. Now, maybe it works out, and there's four teams from the NL West that want him, so it don't matter. But it does lessen the interest, because why would you trade for a guy that's unvaccinated if you got to play seven games in Toronto and you think you're going to have to play Toronto possibly in the playoffs? And it does affect the rest of the American League. If you are the Seattle Mariners looking at Andrew Benintendi and go, hey, man, we might play the Toronto in a series or a wild card. I don't want to have a guy that can't even go there. So... And the Royals, the crazy thing is, a lot of teams have already gone to Toronto. They've had a couple guys here or there. The Phillies had four. Mm. The Royals have 10. So I'm going to let you, I want your comments here in a moment, but let me read what Dayton Moore said. Dayton Moore said, we can't really talk about the vaccination status of players, but our guys have done an incredible job for really the last year and a half. Our medical team, coaching staff, our front office personnel of doing our best to educate everybody in our organization and provide them with the necessary guidance, giving them the proper amount of space and grace along the way to make very informed decisions. But at the end of the day, it is their choice. It's what they decide to do, and we've always been an organization that kind of promotes and encourages their individual choices. Unfortunately, some of this affects our team. We're disappointed in some of that, but we realize it's part of the game. It's part of the world we live in, and we're just really looking forward to providing these players that opportunity that they're getting this chance to play in Toronto. End of quote. All right, Dusty, what do you think of all this stuff? Are you irked as a Royals fan with what Whit Merrifield said? Because I'm irked. I'm irked, but I do understand Whit's frustration. He's been on a loser ever since the World Series. He was passed over for Alberto Mondesi to be on the roster in 2015 when he was 19 years old. Mondesi hadn't even played in the bigs hardly at all. He kept getting put over Whit Merrifield, even though Merrifield would actually outperform him in spring training. And then eventually Whit got up here and forced the Royals to keep him up here. And my sources have told me that Mondesi and Merrifield, there's still some animosity there. Whit's still not happy about all that. And I don't blame him. He's a competitor. So I think this is all boiled up to Whit's going, you know what? And by him saying what he said, I think that's basically telling the Royals, I'm okay, trade me.
Absolutely. I mean, if he's even saying those thoughts out loud, that if he ends up in a team that would play in the postseason, well, that's obviously not the Royals. So
clearly.
You know, it can clearly mean that maybe he wants traded.
Wants to play for a winner.
I'm not irked by the comment. I'm annoyed by the comment. We'll put it that way. It doesn't make my blood boil. Like, I don't get all worried about it.
It does for me, because he is the leader on a team
who is going
out there and playing 533 games in a row, but then what if he erased that streak because he was so proud of it, and there was talk that maybe the Royals had tried to talk him to not play and take a day off, so he was somewhat selfish in the streak, but yet I understand being a leader saying I should be out there every day, but then you're cool with being gone for four games.
Yeah, that part of it's all annoying to me. Like, it just, if the Royals were a better team, obviously I'd be more heated right now.
Sure.
Like, I would be frustrated with all of it, not just with Merrifield. I'd be frustrated with all of it. But like you said, and I feel like this is the case, that as the season goes and as the season begins, it's like, okay, if the Royals get out hot, they start the season like 12-4 or something like that, and you know, through their first 30 games, they're 18-12 or something like that. They got a winning record and they feel like they can actually do something here. Then again, what Whit Merrifield said is probably very true. He probably would have been vaccinated at that point. This team did not get off to a good start. They've not been good all year, and I think Whit's like, well, we don't have much to play for anyway. Why would I get vaccinated now? And I think that's where we sit right now with Whit Merrifield. He's obviously said just as much. And I compare it a little bit to what you're talking about. You're talking about, you know, supporting guys like Kyrie or the college football players that don't want to play in their bowl games. It's very, very similar to that college football thing to where, listen, if an Alabama player is playing in one of the regular New Year's Six games, they're going to sit out that game, right? But if they're playing in the college football playoff, they're going to play in that game because it's more important. They're going to risk the injury that could happen to them because it's more important. So you make that decision. I know this is a decision of what you're putting into your body. That's a decision of what you don't want to happen to your body in a bowl game. And so now Whit Merrifield says, hey, I can make this decision based on the fact that, yeah, I could probably help some team contend for a championship here. I probably should do this, right? But this team that I'm on right now is not worth anything right now. We're not playing well. We're not good. Why would I go through that if I don't believe in it right now?
Right.
And so I think that's really what happened with Whit probably as the season went on along. He knew he was playing in Toronto, like you said, but it's like, I don't know that I want to do this because our team isn't very good. We're not going to be doing it. These games aren't going to really matter on our end record anyway. This, and this. A conspiracy theorist could say, is Whit really hurt right now? Like, because that happened like out of the blue. He just got taken out of the fifth inning and has a toe injury, right?
True.
So this could easily be Whit's way of like, hey, I'm going to go take a dive out here and put me on the he's not even on the IL right now.
No, he's not.
And that's the reason. So they could put him on the restricted list when he goes to Toronto so they don't have to pay him.
He claimed that he could maybe play at the end of the series.
Yeah.
But he's not.
And so, again, it's like maybe he takes a dive.
That's
maybe Michael A. Taylor's not actually hurt right now.
Interesting points.
Maybe they are just guys that they didn't put on the IL because it looks better because they're not playing anyway. Your list is 10, but it's really only 7 because three of these guys guaranteed are not even going to be out there.
Singer's not going to pitch.
Exactly. And so it's like your list is really 7. You
but
guys
still,
are cool.
It's still double anybody else's
has
had.
It is. But it's like, you kind of start thinking about some of these things, and it's like, Michael A. Taylor, is he really injured right now? Because there's not been, like, anything official. There's just been people talking like he might have a – I mean, he played the next day as a DH. Like, it wasn't like he has not played since he pitched, right?
Right.
And so it's just like some of those things are going through my mind. Like, maybe Whit didn't want this streak to end because he had COVID.
The Taylor one, I think, is more believable because, one, you can DH. It don't matter if your shoulder's bothered.
Sure,
you can
DH.
That's a piece of cake. We got lots of guys that have arm injuries and they still DH. But Witt's was interesting because it was like in between innings and the pitcher was warming up and you see the video of him really starting to be bothered by his toe and this and that. And it's kind of like my first initial reaction was, that seems a little odd. And then I kind of forgot about it until you just brought it up.
Yeah.
So, and if that's
obviously
if that's the case,
if you buy
though,
into conspiracies and stuff like that,
but if
that's going to go through your mind.
If that is the case, then that's not a guy you want on your team.
No. And listen, and
which is sad because I love Whit Merrifield.
Yeah, and Whit's been a guy that's been annoyed by some of the stuff that Royals have done in the past.
You bet
and
he
he's not been afraid to make that public. Like he basically said one year, like, I'm tired of losing.
Yes.
Like, we need to get people in here that are going to win.
And I want to play second base.
And so, yeah. And he's been vocal. It's not like this is the first time Whit Merrifield has questioned some things during his time with the Royals. And I think Whit's taking most of the heat right now, but a lot of these other guys are hurting the Royals too. Like Andrew Benintendi's at the top of that list. I mean, he's your all-star, and now there's reports out saying the Yankees have basically stopped pursuit of the guy because he's not vaccinated.
Which I don't blame him.
Yeah, and they're going to play the Blue Jays 6 times in Toronto still this season.
Well, look at MJ Melendez and Kyle Isabel. That's 2 young players that would play 4 games in a row that are going to get 4 less games of experience because they chose not to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
I mean, so, not the end of the world for him, but now the Royals are on their 4th-string catcher.
Yeah, and again, I'm on the side. I'm on the side of Kyrie Irving if he wants to make that decision to do what he wants to do. I'm on the side of the college football players that don't want to play in the game. I'm annoyed by a lot of it, right? I don't like it as a fan, but I 100% completely understand it because it's their decision. And I'm not going to be the one that makes that decision for them. And if their teammates are fine with it and can move on with it, then that's fine. But I feel like Whit's getting a lot of – and Whit said the things, right? He went out and said them in public. But there are a lot of teams – or a lot of players here that are in a lot of people's eyes – letting down the team, right? It's not just Witt.
Oh, no doubt. It's not just Witt. But
and
Witt,
for the future, it's definitely not just Witt.
But it was. But Witt's the only one to basically coming out and saying, I don't want to play for an organization.
Yeah.
I mean, he's roundaboutly saying, listen, I'd be interested in getting vaccinated if I could go to a team that can contend and actually go to Toronto in the postseason. And he knows that's not the Royals.
And
so
I think a lot of people would have that same mentality, but
sure.
they don't say it.
Well, yeah. Well, but Witt's, he's been around the league long enough, he can say it.
Yeah.
Like, Andrew Benintendi, maybe he has been, but not with the Royals long enough, so he may not do that. Also, it would hurt the Royals if he says things like that, because then they're like, well, the Royals have to trade him now. And that's the thing. Witt's value isn't much right now. And that's where the Royals messed up when you look back at it. And I'm not going to say I told you so, because I didn't. I wanted to keep Witt with my heart, but my head said we should trade him. And I had people tell me, you can't trade Witt. You can't trade Witt. I'm like, well, listen, if we can trade Carlos Beltran, we can trade Whit Merrifield. All right? Carlos Beltran was five times the player Whit Merrifield is, okay?
Oh,
sorry.
Absolutely.
He's a five-tool player. He's an amazing player. And if we can trade, we can trade him. Trust me. We can trade Whit Merrifield. And now there's not a lot of value. And on top of that, even probably less value because he's also not vaccinated. But he'll consider getting vaccinated if he's a postseason. And to me, it's like you're not standing behind your conviction. That's the part I don't like. Like, you're basically saying you're hedging your bet. I mean, he's being honest. I'll give him that. But you can see why Royals fans are ticked off, because this is a guy that many people can't see have loved. He's been kind of the underdog, the late bloomer. He, you know, goes out there every day and plays. And now suddenly it's kind of like, and there'll be some people take his side and say, listen, he's tired of losing. Our organization stinks. Ain't going anywhere anyway. Good luck to Witt. Go somewhere where you can win. And I'm okay with that. I totally am. But I don't like when somebody talks about all of this research and all of this tells me this, and then you totally contradict yourself and say, well, I'll get vaccinated if I'm on the right team. Well, that means you don't fully believe in the research. Because if you did, you know what you would say? I'm not getting vaccinated. I'll be like Novak Djokovic. Like, you've got to give Novak Djokovic
like
credit. Or in Kyrie as well. But Novak Djokovic has said already, I'm not going to play in the U.S. Open if they keep this certain rules.
Monday. It's like this guy is on a chase for the most ever Grand Slams in the history of men's tennis.
He's got every reason.
Of all tennis.
He's got every reason to step aside and take the vaccine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But he's hung, you know, he's stuck to his convictions and says, I'm not doing it. So he's not playing two tournaments in a row unless something changes.
It might cost him the all-time major title
in Australia because of what happened already this year, but the last tournament. So for 2023, he guaranteed cannot get a visa to Australia to play.
Right.
And unless something changes in their rules and laws.
He may never get to 22, and he would give up a few prime chances because he stood firm with his convictions. Whit Merrifield's not that guy. So that's the part that kind of bothers me a little bit. It's like, dude, you can say all these great things about research, and this tells me that, but all of a sudden you're like, but I'll change my mind if I go to this team. Well, then you're not really fully strong in your convictions. I don't like that.
I was going to go all conspiracy gate with the toe and the and like the lengthened vacation for everybody.
Because he's probably on a plane already, right?
Right, yeah. I kind of.
Witt's already got trip booked.
Yeah, so.
He's in Belize.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the Cayman Islands.
I want to know
days.
What Tech Nine knows about Whit Merrifield's toe, and I want to know how high this goes up. Does Andy Reid know? Does Fats Domino know? What all the can, you know, who knows about Whit's toe? But yeah, because I kind of agree with everything, with a lot of the points you guys have already brought up. I never want to hear the best ability is availability anymore from some of these guys.
Yeah.
I might give some of the younger guys a pass. You know, maybe MJ Melendez really didn't know if he was going to be going to Toronto this season.
That's true. He was in the minors earlier.
Yeah. You know, and there's a difference in what you think and what you know at 23 as opposed to 33. So I might give someone like him a pass, but
Merrifield, Taylor, Benintendi are the three that they're the veterans of that group. And they could easily have taken care of it.
Yeah, and I think maybe they thought things would change, like they wouldn't have to do anything. Rules would change. Things would get better or worse and things would be more clear, but then again, I don't know.
I think they were waiting to see if they were good or not. That's what I think that's all it was. I think if the Royals in May or even June, if they were right there, I think these guys might have got vaccinated. Yeah. But instead, they waited. And then when they got closer, like, dude, we stink. We're 20 games under 500. We're in last place. We're going nowhere. Why do I need to get vaccinated? Yeah. Like Witt's basically saying.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what Taylor and Benetton feel as well.
Trying to give possibilities here. But yeah.
No, I don't think they expected much to change. The law and the mandate wasn't going to change. Nobody really saw any changes coming there. But you're being nice, I think, in regards to all of that. You're trying.
Yeah.
So anyway, Whit Merrifield and 9 other Royals will not play in Toronto. So they'll have a whole new roster. Who knows what the lineup's going to look like? But Ryan O'Hearn, my boy, got vaccinated. It's the Ryan O'Hearn in the lineup, baby. Yeah. I guarantee that guy. If that guy in the lineup tonight, then cut him.
Well, I'm backup
Nick
catcher.
Nick going to play? Like,
you're backup catcher. Bradfoot's backup.
It's
catcher.
Either me or the kid from the Sandlot. I don't know.
Sweet
which one.
Dude. Yeah. I'll play right field in place of the All Star right fielder according to Matt Snyder, Andrew Benintendi. And he doesn't play right, Matt, but hey, it's okay. I wouldn't want you to do anything right.
You know, but there's a silver lining I feel like with this is like...
Some younger guys get
we can actually literally watch the Royals tonight, watch young, except Melendez. Yeah. We can see who's down there and what they might bring to the table.
How long have we talked about just get rid of all the veterans and just see the young guys?
And so it's like this is... It's four games. You're terrible. You're in last place. You're 18 games under 500. Yeah. This is why I'm annoyed and not ticked off about it, right? Like really like...
Hey, if the Royals are 53 and 35, we'd all feel a lot different.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So it's just like some lady wrote a column for Sports Illustrated, and like in her tweet, kind of introducing it, her last sentence is, "These are not winning players." And I'm like, obviously, they're 35 and 53. Right.
But I will say
By the way, that was one of the quickest throw a story together, wins incomplete. I'm like, where is this story going?
Yeah. And I was kind of reading it. I was the same way. I'm like, happened. What's your point?
What's
like,
the point of the story?
Where are you going? But the last sentence on her introductory tweet, these are not winning players. Like, well, duh.
Yeah.
Look at the record.
Witt's never been on a winning team.
Here's what I'll say now. I am now rooting for the Toronto Blue Jays to make the playoffs.
Me too.
I want chaos. I want it all.
Yeah,
I want
to find out who's not vaccinated on every team.
Yeah. I know the Red Sox closer wasn't Tanner Houck or something like that because they blew a big lead up there and people got mad, and you know it doesn't necessarily mean he would have closed the door that specific game, but people got mad and
imagine that. Imagine if there's some younger guy that comes up for the Yankees or Red Sox in the last couple months of the year and just is awesome, a young prospect. You know, it happens sometimes, and then you're going to go to Toronto in a divisional series. And that guy ain't available. He didn't get vaccinated. You don't think that person will get crucified?
Right. Yeah.
By the fan base?
Well, yeah. I mean,
whether they even believe in... And what's funny is fans that aren't even vaccinated themselves will still crucify the guy because that's hurting my team from winning. Yes. Yeah, but you're not vaccinated, so why are you yelling at him?
This hasn't been a huge story yet because it's only one or two players on
Philly's
the team.
Had
Philly
four.
Had four, so it was probably a bigger deal in Philly.
Philadelphia, yeah.
But... Now you have all of a sudden you have a team blow up and have 10.
40% of your roster.
And we've also talked a little bit about, well, you know, now if Michael A. Taylor is hurt, you know, conspiracy theory. But, yeah, we talked about, is the Michael A. Taylor arm injury, is that a fireable offense? Is this a fireable offense? But, like, this is just another thing to add to the list of – I'm not necessarily saying manager, but organization-wide. Like, some of these things have to be answered for.
Yeah.
I know Dayton kind of in that quote said, we're trying to give our players the space to make their own choices. But
are they given more space? Is that why there's that many unvaccinated than other organizations?
Dayton's always kind of been like that.
I think so.
Where he's kind of open to letting guys do what they do. And
by the way, this is not something that caught the Royals off guard. They already had in the minors guys not playing the last few days because they knew that they were going to have to. This is not something that just was sprung on them.
Yeah.
My question is, how long have they known all 10 of these guys haven't been vaccinated?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would guess that they have to have some sort of record of their status as a team.
I would think so before the season begins.
As the season, and even as the season
call-ups.
Goes on. As like
I would think everybody in the organization
what's your status, because we need to know if you can play.
I would think you need to know if everybody in the organization at any level before the season begins. Yeah. I would think
you could have traveling secretaries and you know,
trust me, they got medical histories of everybody.
Yeah.
So this is no big surprise to the Royals. No. They knew it was coming. It's a surprise to the fan base, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, that's crazy. And suddenly the Royals are on the front story of Fox, ESPN, and CBS. It took that for the Royals to get all kinds of recognition. Who knew?
Like, Royals fans are more mad about this than the fact that their team sucks. I'm like, where have you been all year? Like, why haven't you been mad about the way the team's been playing?
Because they didn't even know. They couldn't watch them half the time.
We're conditioned, right?
Cubs update, Jason Broadfoot.
Yes, they were brought to you by Stan Makita's Donuts.
Donuts.
Yeah. Made famous by Wayne's World.
Party time.
One thing that's not excellent is the Cubs' record as they lose to the Orioles again, 7-1.
Orioles won 10 in a row, as I said. Mariners won 10 in a row, and the Royals now have a better record than the Cubs.
Yeah.
Royals are now the fifth worst team, maybe the sixth worst team in baseball. And now, with young guys coming in, they're going to sweep the Blue Jays. So we're looking fun. We're looking good. All right, Big 12 Media Days was yesterday for football at a TNT Stadium there in Texas. New Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark was officially introduced to the media. And here is his thoughts on realignment.
I've been actively engaged in realignment and appreciate the incredible input I've received from everyone throughout the conference. Exploration and optionality is at the forefront of what we are focused on. Anything considered must be additive and not dilutive. Sometimes the best deals are the ones that don't get done. Although I have a lot to learn, I'm confident in my background and that it's well suited for this role, and I'm excited to go to work. I embrace the responsibility to be a steward of this great conference and to carry out the mission and vision of our member institutions.
Yormark is the new commissioner, and he's walking into a really interesting situation, of course, and UCLA and USC moved to the Big Ten, and Yormark not supposedly officially beginning until August 1st, but he's already begun his job. We know that. Here's his reaction on USC and UCLA leaving for the Big Ten, his initial reaction.
I was excited by it in many respects because I saw there was opportunity, and I figured I'd be thrown into it a little sooner than I had thought. And as Linda said, I've been working very closely with Bob and others on defining our path forward. So I do look at it as an opportunity. As I said earlier, we're going to vet out all the possibilities and options and determine where we go.
And your mark on joining the Big 12 now.
What excites me most about joining the Big 12 is the transformative moment in front of all of us today. We have an opportunity to grow and build the Big 12 brand and business, be aspirational, define our point of difference, all while never losing our commitment to always compete and develop our student athletes at the highest levels. Moments like these do not happen often, and we must seize them and make the most of them. It will require incredible work and collaboration. One thing is for sure, there is no doubt the Big 12 is open for business. We will leave no stone unturned to drive value for the conference. Just as I pledged to the board, we will be bold and humble, aggressive and thoughtful, and innovative and creative. All in an effort to position the conference in a way that not only grows the Big 12 brand and business, but makes us a bit more contemporary.
All right, so what's his plans for the first 60 days?
During August and September, I will conduct a listening tour and visit all 14 campuses. I will meet with stakeholders to gain a historical point of view and to ask, what does success look like? Following my first 60 to 90 days, I will report back to the board with my observations and how I see our path forward. I will work very closely with our member institutions to ensure we are prepared to seize opportunities that benefit our league. And if those happen within the first 60 days, we will move as fast as we need to. One thing is crystal clear. There is no higher priority than to best position the Big 12 for its upcoming multimedia rights negotiations. Everything we do must create momentum for these negotiations, as well as building the value of the Big 12 brand and business.
And a new commissioner looking at all options.
There is not a definitive plan right now. We're exploring all options. I can assure you that given the time I've spent with our presidents, our chancellors, our athletic directors, we are a very unified group. Bob mentioned that during his opening comments. It was one of the things that drew me to the job, the alignment that the board and AD community all have for going forward. So as we vet out the possibilities, everything will be additive, nothing will be dilutive, and I feel very confident that our conference is in the best position it's ever been in before. Bob is leaving us in a great place.
One of the things that stood out to me about his comments yesterday is, and it's very important, it's just like when you have a change in power, even in any kind of government, is that you want to know that the guy coming in or the gal coming in is assertive, aggressive. You want to make a great first impression. And there's no doubt he comes in at a very, very volatile time with all the conference realignment, Mr. Yormark does. And we know the Pac-12 has a new commissioner. He's only been there about a year. The previous commissioner, as Mark Johnson said, failed in so many ways. The voice of Buffalo said failed. Larry Scott failed so many ways. We know that Dan Beebe, was horrible commissioner of the Big 12. We know that Bob Bowlesby was an improvement, but still had some issues, obviously, not even knowing Texas OU was going to the SEC, blah, blah, blah. But this is what he has to say, because he needs people that he's talking to are teams that are maybe thinking, maybe I should leave the Pac-12. Or, I'm the ACC. If the SEC don't want me, maybe I should consider the Big 12. Teams that are on the fence are in tough situations. Other conferences, I have to be listening going, you know what? That sounds like some stability there. That sounds like a guy that gets it. He understands the younger people that watch college football. He's referred to that. He's talked about innovative and creative technology and reaching out to younger people, which I think is terrific, because a lot of times you get these people, and let's be honest, you know who they are. They're usually old white men. I'm just going to say it. That's what it is. We got that in politics, where there's a lot of old white men that serve in our country in regards to not serving our country in war, but elected officials that have no idea what's going on in the real world and have no idea what's happening with the younger generation, have no idea about mental health issues, have no idea about anything. They live in their little bubble and they don't get outside of it. And they believe this, the world has never changed in 38 years. Okay. We have a lot of old white men. I'm not trying to offend any old white man out there, by the way, but it's a fact. We have a lot of old white men that are some of the most powerful people in the world at some of the highest levels. Well, we have that in corporations. We have that in conferences like, Greg Sankey's no young pup in the SEC. So this is a guy that's a little younger, a guy that has worked with the entertainment business. He's been involved in various professional sports leagues. This is a guy that gets it, I think. Now, he could be the next Ron Prince, and he tells you and sells you everything great, and then he ends up being a horrible commissioner. I don't know. But he did what he had to do, in my opinion, and that is say, we're aggressive, we're assertive, we're going to look at all options, we're open for business, and we're really excited about where we're going to take it, and he doesn't pull any punches. We've got to have momentum going into our new TV deal negotiations, which I think they have a little.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, everything he said there is everything you want your new commissioner to be saying. It's in everything that really Bob Bowlesby wasn't saying a lot about, right? Like it didn't seem like he was fully in tune with what was actually going on in his conference.
Like, I always felt he was kind of on the fence a little bit.
Yeah. Like there's something wrong here, but I don't know how to fix it, is basically what it felt like with Bob Bowlesby for me.
I agree. And the only thing he ever said to me that I remember being extremely strong and supportive of the conference is when he attacked ESPN after that happened. Yeah. And I was like, well, hell, somebody's got a backbone. This guy seems to have a backbone from the very beginning, and I think that's why the Big 12 obviously hired him. So I'm looking forward to what he can do. So the Big 12 will move forward into the 2022 football season with the current structure as it's been since 2012. There'll be 10 teams. Let's start with KU. You can hear the Jayhawks during the football season on Z96.3 Lake. Lance Leipold in his second year with the Jayhawks. He's seen a lot of progress. He hopes to improve on a 2-10 finish from a year ago.
After this event today, I think it's probably officially a year into how everything works. And I think that is pretty resonant within our program as well as we continue to grow and develop and build our program. But we're excited about year two. Year one was definitely a whirlwind, but we feel the foundation's been set in many ways. Feel very pleased on how we finished last season, where we progressed here in spring, and some of the additions to our roster. And we're excited to get going here in August.
Remember, Lance Leipold and KU had an extremely late start when he came in. Now you're going to have a full regular. They've had a full spring. They've had a full year to get accustomed, and that's big. Here's Coach Leipold on how he judges improvement.
You know, what we're really saying is sometimes how are you going to measure progress when it's not showing up in the win and loss column all the time? And I think we've been, our players have really embraced it. We understand, and we emphasize as well, we're not in the moral victory business, and we understand that completely. But we're always looking at where, whether it be individual improvement in certain things, how we've gone about our daily business, and really how we've connected dots with our players about becoming better holistically, whether it be weight room or academically, and better being better leadership, better teammates, that these things are going to stack upon themselves and help us on game day. And I think you know, the proof of that is, you know, when a 1-8 football team goes on the road and finds a way to win and plays even some even better football maybe the next 2 weeks and starts showing the signs of closing gaps that we have to do. And I think that's going to be very imperative again this year. And I think our guys understand that.
Of course, the biggest addition for KU is adding Kai Thomas from Minnesota. He's from Topeka. He ran for over 1,000 yards for the Gophers. He's now going to be in the backfield with Devin Neal. Had a very good freshman campaign. Coach Leipold on the backfield for the Jayhawks and adding Kai Thomas.
We're excited about the addition of Kai Thomas, you know, right down the road from Topeka. He had an excellent end to his season previously at the University of Minnesota, desiring to come back closer to home. You know, Devin and Kai have known each other since youth football days and youth sports. Devin was heavily involved in the recruiting visit process and communication. So, and Devin understands, being a Lawrence native, how important it is for us to build this program, build it with depth, and it's going to be healthy competition, but they're going to really help each other.
And then, of course, you know, Jalen Daniels came on late and played well against Texas in that upset win at Austin. And the quarterback spot, at least it seems to be in a little bit better hands. Here is Leipold on the quarterback position for KU and Jalen Daniels.
You know, I think Jalen's here for a lot of reasons, especially the way he played late in the year for us. You know, the two games he played here as well against West Virginia, a lot of things. I jokingly say I haven't named Devin Neal the running back, starting running back either. So it's something there. But I think it also goes back to my previous answer a little bit is embracing competition and doing things. I think our program knows. I think Jason Bean understands his role and where it's at right now. Jason Bean is, I thought, had a very good spring and took steps as well. And he will continue to get better as well. But we know right now where Jalen is and what we expect to, you know, him to do in August and as we get ready for game one.
So that's a look for KU. There's some optimism for KU going into the upcoming football season, a little bit of momentum at the end. And, of course, as we've said for a long time, it starts at the quarterback position. If KU could ever get some good quarterback play, they're obviously can be competitive in this league. They haven't had a really good quarterback since Todd Reesing. And oddly enough, that was the last time the KU Jayhawks were any good at football. KU opened their season on a Friday, which I certainly love, at home against Tennessee Tech. Friday, September the 2nd. K-State, a team with expectations. This is a team that, hey, they've got Adrian Martinez now. They have six players voted onto the preseason all-conference team, so high expectations for the Wildcats. Chris Kleiman, head coach of K-State, on the outlook for the Wildcats this year.
We're excited. We have very optimistic, high expectations, as everybody does this time of year. But we've got a lot of work to do. Have a number of guys back on both sides of the ball, but as the landscape of college football is right now, it's going to be the new players that you've got to mesh with those returning players that are going to be the key to your success. And we have a number of positions where we're going to have a lot of new faces out there. And some were here in the spring. Many of them were not here in the spring. And so for us to get together with those guys in August and have a great fall camp and put the work in so that come September we can start off the fall with a good season.
Adrian Martinez is new quarterback for Kansas State, and I saw him, and I retweeted it because I sent that to my oldest, because when he was at a basketball camp there in Manhattan, he liked to go get some hamburgers at the So Long Saloon, which they are very good there in Aggieville, and Adrian Martinez talked about how he likes So Long Saloon, so he's fitting right on in, and he is the new quarterback for Kansas State. Here's Kleiman on the addition, the transfer quarterback from Nebraska.
The first thing that drew us to him, obviously, was the amount of games that he has played at Nebraska. But if you get around Adrian or you visit with Adrian, the first thing that jumps out at me is his maturity and what a grounded individual he is. I've been so impressed with him as a person, as a man of faith, as somebody that came in and missed all the spring because of an injury he had. He practiced the last two practices, but just watching him bond with the players, watching him build relationships during a time when he couldn't be out front leading after a workout or after a practice, and now to see him going through the summer where he is cleared and healthy, and watching him, you know, just kind of command the room. He's a tremendously mature individual that brings out the best in everybody, and that's what excites me about him.
K-State opened their season September 3rd at home against South Dakota. Just quick thoughts there, Dusty. K-State, of course, like I said, high expectations. I think KU's got bigger expectations, which aren't big, but they're bigger than they've had in the last few years. There is reason for K-State and KU football fans to be looking forward to this season.
Yeah, I've seen like K-State fans putting out jokes on Twitter about when Leipold says, hey, we're looking for improvement. We feel like we're going to have improvement. And they're like, what, you're going to win two Big 12 games now instead of one? And
that would be
like,
an improvement.
It's improvement. But at the same time, I'm not a K-State fan that is taking Lance Leipold and KU's program lightly.
You shouldn't.
And this guy is doing the things the right way, right? Mm-hmm. He's not trying to rush it. He's not trying to go find Jake Heaps and Dane Crist and guys like this just to get sexy names on his team. Yes. Kai Thomas came in, but he's from Kansas. He's from Topeka. He's right down the road, right?
Yep.
So you understand that. But Lance Leipold, and we said it right away, and I felt it right away, that this is the right guy for the job. This is the right direction that they need to take. Will that translate into wins and bowl games and things like that? I don't know, because we thought Scott Frost was the right guy for Nebraska, too, and it hasn't turned out to be what they expected it. But we do know that, and I know that Lance Leipold is actually going about this the right way. There's nothing that shows that they're just in like a, we got to win now and make a sexy hire and make it look like we're actually taking this serious or whatever they were doing with Les Miles. And so I feel like they've got things going the right direction, and I am not taking that lightly for Kansas, because they're going to improve drastically, I feel like, this year. And I'm not saying that's going to turn into five or six wins. I'm saying you're going to see how much better that team is from week one. And so that's what I feel about Kansas. K-State, I mean, obviously you got six guys on the all Big 12 team coming in. You got high expectations. And Adrian Martinez is a guy that can, a veteran that you feel can slide right in and learn under Colin Klein as the new offensive coordinator. And you feel confident and you feel good about that moving forward. So there's a lot of good things to think about. And I would say if you're a fan of any team in the state of Kansas in football this year, there's things to look forward to and things to see, you know, how much improvement you're making. Obviously, K-State's goal is a little bit higher and loftier than Kansas.
Sure.
They want to be in the discussion to make it to the Big 12 championship game and be in the discussion to maybe win a conference championship. And so there's going to be a different layer there, but it should be an exciting and fun year to keep track and to follow both of these teams. But obviously, I'm super excited about what K-State might be able to bring to the table if they can stay consistent and stay healthy. That's been one of their big issues with, obviously, the quarterback position over the last couple of years. So if they can do all those things, then listen, they got a legit shot, I feel like, to be in contention for one of those two spots in the championship game.
The dynamic I'm really interested in is, I guarantee there's a lot of Husker fans that are keeping a close eye on what Adrian Martinez does in Manhattan. And I think it would be fascinating to see Adrian Martinez just flourish and blossom and do what he was capable of doing in Nebraska, but maybe didn't have enough around him, especially offensive line. Special teams was atrocious. If he's got three phases of a good football team, he's got a great running back in Deuce Vaughn, he's got a decent offensive line. Adrian Martinez, I think, is, you know, a little bit more comfortable in what's happening everyday life. His girlfriend now is closer and everything else, as long as they stay happy together. I think Adrian Martinez feels a little bit less pressure, because Nebraska obviously is a lot of pressure, and it was from the very beginning. When he was 18 as a freshman, came on, they talked about Heisman Trophy hopeful, and he looked pretty good and showed the flashes as a freshman. I think Adrian Martinez, as long as he stays healthy, is going to flourish. And so then my question would be, what will that say and how will that reflect on Scott Frost and the Nebraska football program? Because if Adrian Martinez could go to K-State and K-State could win the Big 12 this year, let's say they win 10 games, and Adrian Martinez has a great year to where he's considered for maybe he's up for the offensive player of the year in the Big 12, or who knows what it might be. But if he has a really good, solid, or great season, you know, I think that's an indictment on Scott Frost, and it's an indictment on Nebraska football that a guy that had all that talent in Nebraska couldn't get it done there. And I don't think it's really necessarily on Adrian Martinez. I think it's on the coaches, because the coaches' jobs get the best out of the talent that they recruit. Frost, of course, inherited Adrian Martinez, but man, what a guy they inherit. And we know that the Huskers had no chance without Adrian Martinez last year. If you actually watch games, yes, he made some mistakes and turnovers, but a lot of times he had to press and make plays because he didn't have a great backfield, didn't have a great offensive line, and special teams were god awful. So I would be interested to see what happen if he has a great year, what Husker fans can say about that. I think it's going to be, instead of going, well, that's great and all, and make excuses, I think Nebraska fans will be like, oh, see, there's another nail in the coffin for Scott Frost. If you don't have a great year this year, look, he had a guy that could have been that, but you didn't get the best out of him, and it's going to look poorly on Scott Frost. Now, if Adrian Martinez really stinks and doesn't do well, then Husker fans, I think, will be like,
I told you so,
and Frost knew, blah, blah, blah.
It's a weird dynamic with the fan base and Scott Frost right now and the quarterback situation. Adrian Martinez came in, started off really well. People loved him. Then things went bad. That love-hate relationship comes in a little bit with the quarterback. It's all his fault. It's all, he gets all the glory when they win, gets all the blame when they lose, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting. If he comes here, and I think he's going to play well.
I do too.
In Kansas State, in Manhattan, and probably see the best of Adrian Martinez, or more of the best of Adrian Martinez. He still might make a mistake here or there, but that's what you get at this point. But I think you're going to see more of the better Adrian Martinez. And it's weird, Nebraska has the same feelings about Texas as a lot of people have about Texas, but yet... they went and got their quarterback and are super excited about getting this guy from Texas whose record really hasn't been a whole lot better than Nebraska's in the last few years. There's a few more wins.
Not as long here. A track record.
Right. And so there's just no it's inconsistency in that fan base on what they want from a quarterback and from what they want from their head coach. And it could really be, like you said, maybe the nail in the coffin if Adrian Martinez comes to Manhattan, wins 8-9 games, maybe a few.
Plays really great, they win a lot of games, and then Nebraska struggles again.
Yes. Yeah. That could be the final thing, because that's the thing they trusted Scott Frost with was quarterbacks.
Yep.
And if it doesn't work out here, it could be trouble.
It's simple. Nebraska fans aren't inconsistent. I'll disagree with you for this one point. Here's where they're very consistent. They want to win. That's it.
Sure.
They don't care who the quarterback is. I mean, they love to have a great quarterback, but all they want is a good quarterback. That's what they want. They want to win. Like, they had a very talented quarterback, Adrian Martinez. He is a very good quarterback, in my opinion. He didn't have enough around him. And that's on the coaches recruiting and developing and so forth and so on. But I know lots of Husker fans that they're very consistent from this standpoint. They're already tired of losing. They want to win. In fact, there's a lot of them that would love to win 9 again, and then what? Fire your coach? Because they've done that a couple times. But there's no doubt all the Husker fans I know, they're like, dude, we have got to get back to Nebraska football and winning games. So if Scott Frost wins 8 games with 3 different quarterbacks and rotates them, or he wins it with a guy that's a Heisman hopeful candidate, it don't matter. As long as Nebraska wins games, that's a step that Nebraska fans are like, we want to be actually competing in the Big Ten, and we haven't been the last couple of years. Oh, we've had lots of close losses. That don't mean nothing. It's the W column. That's the W column. And Nebraska's not going to care. If K-State wins 8-9 games, but Nebraska wins 7-8-9 games, I don't think they're going to care if Adrian Martinez had a great year or not. In fact, I think some Husker fans will be like, oh, good for him. But if Nebraska goes 3-9 again, and Martinez wins 7-8-9-10 games, or better, it'll be like, oh, dear Lord, what did Frost do? How could he not get that out of Adrian Martinez? Right. Because we saw it, the flashes as a freshman. And so it will be very interesting to see how Nebraska fans look at Adrian Martinez and how he plays at Kansas State. But if Nebraska is winning games, a lot of games, they ain't going to care that much. They ain't going to care that much.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are they going to care about Adrian Martinez if they're winning more games than K-State? They ain't going to care.
Yeah.
They ain't going to care.
Part,
they ain't
right,
going to
yeah.
care. Right. You think they're going to say, we want Adrian Martinez back? We're winning more games without him. The only thing they're going to say is, well, see, I knew he wasn't that good. That would be the thing.
Yeah.
Well, see, he was overrated. See, Kleiman couldn't do anything better. Colin Klein couldn't do anything better than Scott Frost did. And that'd be the Scott Frost supporters coming out, which we know aren't as many as there was there for a while.
No.
Yeah.
It's
It's interesting.
It's a teetering on the edge there for some of them.
Yeah. Who has a better record this year, K-State or Nebraska?
Yeah, K-State.
There's a Husker fan immediately said K-State. So there you go. There you go. Mike Gundy, stirring the pot, Oklahoma State head coach, said he thinks Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark should not allow the Longhorns and the Sooners in the conference's business meetings. He said, I quote, it's interesting. We go to conference meetings and OU and Texas are in there. They're still in the conference, but I'm guessing when they leave, they're scratching down things that can help them when they're in the SEC. So it's an unusual situation. I think there's a business side of it that nowadays people say it is what it is, which 10 years ago, they might not even let them in the meetings. The new commissioner, I mean, honestly, if I was him, I wouldn't let OU and Texas in the meetings. He says, I say that jokingly, but I mean, if you're strategically in a business meeting and it's two cell phone companies, I don't want somebody from their company inside my company. I totally agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally agree.
It's like I say it jokingly, and obviously we know who Mike Gundy is. He's going to stir the pot. That's one of the things he's best at doing, right?
Sure.
But he's not wrong here. Like I don't know, they're not going to be here in a couple of years, so why are we planning the future with them here? Like, that's what doesn't make sense to me. Like, maybe if you have like a board meeting that involves the fiscal year of this year, right, that you're still involved with, and the revenues coming in and all those kind of things. But anything that involves, like, discussion of the future of the Big 12, they should not be in there at all. Like, I wouldn't want them in there if I was Brett Yormark. I certainly would not have wanted them in there if I was Bob Bowlesby. I'm like, no, you guys are leaving. You're not welcome at the table here.
I'll give you a poor analogy probably, but here we go. So this would be like your girlfriend left you. You have a new girlfriend. In fact, you're engaged and you're planning your wedding. And the girl that broke up with you is involved in all the wedding plans. This is awkward.
Yeah.
Like, why do I need you here? I don't know. It's just a weird situation. It's just completely awkward. It's like I totally get what Mike Gundy is saying. I thought that from the very beginning. Well, we're leaving in a few years. Well, same thing with the teams coming in Big 12. They're still in a conference. That's got to be weird too. But that's the beauty of, or the horrible part of conference realignment, is you're still part of a conference, but you're already halfway out the door and maybe going to push to leave sooner, which I'm saying go for it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The British Open, I'm going to pull up. I don't even know who this guy is. Cameron Young, 8-under after the first round of British Open. Cameron Young. There's an American golfer. Maybe we can market him. Roy McIlroy is 6-under. And Cameron Smith is 5-under. And let me see here. Bryson DeChambeau is 3-under. And all these guys have, well, not all of them have finished their round yet. Quite a few have. I'm looking here to see where Tiger is. It doesn't look good. Phil Mickelson finished even par. And where are we at on Tiger? Well, I'm going way down. Did I skip him? Gary Woodland's 1-over. I'm still going.
There he is.
There he is, 3-over. Not a good start for Tiger. But he's 3-over through 3 holes.
He's now 4-over through 4.
Oh, wow. That's not a... He's on pace to shoot 90. That's not going to get it done. That's a good score for
relatable.
Me.
That's relatable. That's
bogey golf is good for all three of us, but not for Tiger Woods or anybody on the Precious Tour. That is not a good start. So Rory, who is the Vegas odds favorite to win the British Open, is 6-under, but Cameron Young is 8-under leading after the first round, but there are other golfers still on the course at St. Andrews Links, the old course there in Scotland. So when we thought it was going to be a slow show, what do you know? Whit Merrifield and the Royals make it something different.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.